I also saw the Russia. They had come to trade and had disembarked at the Itil River. I have never seen bodies as nearly perfect as theirs. As tall as palm trees, fair and reddish, they wear neither tunics nor caftans. Every man wears a cloak with which he covers half his body, so that one arm is uncovered. They carry axes, swords, and daggers, and always have them to hand. They use Frankish swords with broad, ridged blades. They are dark from the tips of their toes right up to their necks, with trees, pictures, and the like. Every woman wears a small box made of iron, silver, brass, or gold, depending on her husband's financial worth and social standing, tied at her breasts. The box has a ring to which a knife is attached, also tied at her breasts. The women wear neck rings of gold and silver. When a man has amassed 10,000 dirhams, he has a neck ring made for his wife. When he has amassed 20,000 dirhams, he has two neck rings made. For every subsequent 10,000, he gives a neck ring to his wife. This means a woman can wear many neck rings. The jewelry they prize the most is the dark ceramic beads that they have aboard their boats and which they trade amongst themselves. They purchase beads for one dirham each and string them together as necklaces for their wives. They are the filthiest of God's creatures. They have no modesty when it comes to defecating or urinating, and do not wash themselves when intercourse puts them in a state of ritual impurity. They don't even wash their hands after eating. Indeed, they are like roaming asses. They arrive, moor their boats by the Itil, and build large wooden houses on its banks. They share a house, in groups of 10 and 20, sometimes more, sometimes fewer. Each reclines on a couch. They are accompanied by beautiful female slaves for trade with the merchants. They have intercourse with their female slaves in full view of their companions. Sometimes they gather in a group and do this in front of each other. A merchant may come in to buy a female slave and stumble upon the owner having intercourse. The ruse does not leave her alone until he has satisfied his urge. They must wash their faces and heads each day with the filthiest water you can imagine. Let me explain. Every morning a female slave brings a large basin full of water and hands it to her master. He washes his hands, face, and hair in the water. Then he dips the comb in the water and combs his hair. Then he blows his nose and spits in the basin. He is prepared to do any filthy, impure act in the water. When he is finished, the female slave carries the basin to the man next to him, who performs the same routine as his comrade. She carries it from one man to the next and goes around to everyone in the house. Every man blows his nose and spits in the basin, and then washes his face and hair. They disembark as soon as their boats dock. Each carries bread, meat, onions, milk, and alcohol to a large block of wood set in the ground. The piece of wood has a face on it, the face of a man. It is surrounded by small figurines placed in front of large blocks of wood set in the ground. He prostrates himself before the large figure and says, "Lord, I have come from a distant land with such and such a number of female slaves and such a number of sable pelts." He lists all his merchandise. Then he says, "And I have brought this offering." He leaves his offering in front of the piece of wood, saying, "I want you to bless me with a rich merchant with many dinars and dirhams, who will buy from me whatever I wish, and will not haggle over any price I set." Then he leaves. If he finds it hard to sell his goods and has to stay there too many days, he comes back with a second and third offering. If his wishes are not fulfilled, he brings an offering to every single figurine and seeks its intercession, saying, "These are the wives, daughters, and sons of our Lord." He goes up to each figurine in turn and petitions it, begging for its intercession, and grovelling before it. Sometimes business is good, and he makes a quick sale. In that case, he says, "My lord has satisfied my request, so I need to compensate him." He acquires some sheep or cows and kills them, gives a portion of the meat as alms, and places the rest before a large block of wood and small ones around it. He ties the head of the cows or the sheep to the piece of wood set up in the ground. When night falls, the dogs come and eat it all up. And the man who has gone to all his trouble says, "My lord is pleased with me and has eaten my offering." When one of them falls ill, they pitch a tent far away and lay him down inside with some bread and water. They do not approach him or speak to him. Indeed, they have no contact with him for as long as he is ill, especially if he's a social inferior or a slave. If he recovers and gets back onto his feet, he rejoins them. If he dies, they set fire to him. They do not bury dead slaves, but leave them as food for the dogs and the birds. When they catch a thief or a bandit, they take him to a solid tree and put a sturdy rope around his neck. They tie him to the tree and he hangs there until he eventually decomposes from exposure to the rain and the winds. I was told that they set fire to their chieftains when they die. Sometimes they do more, so I was very keen to verify this. Then I learned of the death of a very important man. They had placed him in his grave with a roof raised over him for 10 days while they finished cutting and sewing his garments. When the deceased is poor, they build a small boat for him, place him inside it, and burn it. When he is rich, they collect his possessions and divide them into 3 portions. 1/3 goes to his household, 1/3 is spent on his funeral garments, and 1/3 is spent on the alcohol they drink the day the female slave kills herself and is cremated with her master. They are addicted to alcohol. They drink it night and day. Sometimes one of them dies, cup in hand. When the chieftain dies, the members of his household ask his female and male slaves, "Who will die with him?" One answers, "I will." At this point, the words become binding. There is no turning back. It's not even an option. It's usually the female slaves who offer. When the man I just mentioned died, they said to his female slaves, "Who will die with him?" One said, "I will," so they put 2 other female slaves in charge of her, caring for her and accompanying her wherever she went, even to the point of washing her feet with their hands. Then they attended to the chieftain, cutting his garments and setting in order what was required for him. The female slave drank alcohol every day and sang merrily and cheerfully. I arrived at the river where his boat was moored on the day the chief and the female slave was set on fire. I noticed that the boat had been beached and that it was supported by 4 Kadhank props. These props were surrounded by what looked like huge structures of wood. The boat had been hauled on top of the wood. The Rusia approached, going to and fro around the boat and uttering words I did not understand. The chief was still in his grave and had not been exhumed. They produced a couch and placed it on the boat, covering it with quilts and cushions made with Byzantine silk brocade. An aged woman, who they called the Angel of Death, turned up. She spread the coverings on the couch. It is her responsibility to sew the chieftain's garments and prepare him properly, and it is she who kills the female slave. I saw her myself. She was gloomy and corpulent, but neither young nor old. When they arrived at his grave, they removed the soil from the wood. Then they removed the wood and exhumed him, dressed in the garment he was wearing when he died. I noticed that the coldness of the climate had turned him black. They had placed alcohol, fruit, and a tambour on his grave. They removed all of this. Surprisingly, his corpse had not begun to stink. Only his colour had deteriorated. They dressed him in trousers, leggings, boots, a tunic, and a silk caftan with gold buttons. They placed a peaked silk cap fringed with sable on his head. They carried him inside the yurt that was on the ship and rested him on a quilt, propping him up with the cushions. They placed the alcohol, fruit, and basil beside him. Then they placed bread, meat, and onions in front of him. They cut a dog in two and threw it onto the boat. They placed all his weaponry beside him. They made two horses gallop into a sweat and cut them into pieces with a sword and threw the meat onto the boat. They cut two cows into pieces and threw them on board as well. Then they produced a cock and a hen, killed them, and put them on board. Meanwhile, the female slave who had expressed her wish to die came and went, entering one yurt after another. The owner of the yurt would have intercourse with her and say, "Tell your master that I've done this out of love for you." At the time of the Friday late afternoon prayer, they brought the female slave to an object they had built that resembled a doorframe. She stood on the hands of the men and rose like the sun above the doorframe. She uttered some words, and they brought her down. They lifted her up a second time, and she did what she'd done before. They lowered her and lifted her for a third time, and she did what she'd done the last two times. Then they handed her a hen. She cut off the head and cast it aside. They picked up the hen and threw it onto the boat. I quizzed the interpreter about her actions, and he said, "The first time they lifted her up, she said, 'Look, I see my father and mother.' The second time she said, 'Look, I see all my dead kindred seated.' The third time she said, 'Look, I see my master seated in the garden. The garden is beautiful and dark green. He is with his men and his retainers. He summons me. Go to him.' They took her to the boat, and she removed both of her bracelets, handing them to the woman called the Angel of Death, the one who would kill her. She also removed two anklets she was wearing, handing them to the two female slaves who had waited upon her, the daughters of the woman known as the Angel of Death. They lifted her onto the boat, but did not take her into the yurt. The men approached with shields and sticks and handed her a cup of alcohol. Before drinking, she chanted over it. The interpreter said to me, 'Now she bids her female companions farewell.' She was handed another cup, which she took and chanted for a long time. The crone urged her to drink it and enter the yurt where her master was lying. I could see she was befuddled. She went to enter the yurt, but missed it, placing her head to one side of the yurt between it and the boat. The crone took hold of her head and entered the yurt with her. The men began to bang their shields with the sticks so that the sound of her screaming would be drowned out. Otherwise, it would terrify the other female slaves, and they would not seek to die with their masters. 6 men entered the yurt. They all had intercourse with the female slave and then laid her beside her master. 2 held her feet, 2 her hands. The crone called the Angel of Death, placed a rope around her neck with the ends crossing one another, and handed it to 2 of the men to pull on. She advanced with a broad-bladed dagger and began to thrust it in between her ribs here and there, while the 2 men strangled her with the rope until she died. The deceased's nearest male relative came forward. He picked up a piece of wood and set it alight. He was completely naked. He walked backwards, the nape of his neck towards the boat, his face towards the people. He had the ignited piece of wood in one hand and had his other hand on his anus. he set fire to the wooden structures under the boat. The people came forward with sticks and firewood. They each carried a lighted stick that they threw on top of the wood. The wood caught fire. Then the boat, the yurt, the dead man, the female slave, and everything else on board caught fire. A fearsome wind picked up. The flames grew higher and higher and blazed fiercely. One of the Rusia was standing beside me. I heard him speaking to the interpreter who was with me. I asked him what he had said, and he replied, "He said, 'You Arabs are a lot of fools.' 'Why is that?' I said. 'Because you purposefully take your nearest and dearest and those whom you hold in the highest esteem and put them in the ground, where they are eaten by vermin and worms. We, on the other hand, cremate them there and then, so that they enter the garden on the spot.' I asked him about this, and he said, 'My lord feels such great love for him that he has sent the wind to take him away within an hour.' In fact, it took scarcely an hour for the boat, the firewood, the female slave, and her master to be burnt to ash, and then to very fine ash. The Rusia then built a structure like a round hillock over the breached boat and placed a large piece of kadank in the middle. They wrote the man's name and the name of the king of the Rusia on it. Then they left.